Welcome Steve,
to
thanks.
Prince Spaghetti Day.
Thanks, Wendy. Hi, I'm Bill. That's Wendy. Welcome to the show. A lot to talk about today. Steve, quickly, I know the story changes rapidly, but where do we stand right now in terms of these incendiary devices that have been sent?
We know from the Secret Service that there were devices found that were being sent to the Obamas and to the Clintons. They didn't make it actually to the homes. Hillary Clinton actually is campaigning today for Donna Shalala in Florida, so she's not home. Bill Clinton was. I don't know the disposition of the Obamas, but they said it didn't get there. Then there was a report of a suspicious device. New York City police are responding to in New York City at the Time Warner building at CNN headquarters. So there was a fire alarm pulled there, and CNN is broadcasting from the street for a time. CNN and others were reporting, mostly CNN, I should say, that there was a device sent to the White House. Now, that has not been reported elsewhere, and so I'm not sure the validity of that. But the Secret Service has commented on the record about the Obama and the Clinton devices. And again, there are similarities to one sent to George Soros. Now, those would fit together. The White House is sort of the outlier in all of this. You know, if you're looking for, you know, one of these things doesn't belong with the other, because you've got the more liberal group, Soros, certainly, and the Clintons and the Obamas, and CNN is chastised by the president quite a bit. So I'm not clear about the White House, so I'm sure we'll find out more about that later, but we do know about certainly the other two, and we don't know exactly what they found in New York at CNN's headquarters. Now, the New York Times reported yesterday, which I think is interesting, that they think the Soros device was actually hand-delivered to a mailbox at his home. Which seems to me would offer a great potential for evidence to finding who
cameras.
This might have been.
What did they have to be detonated? Do we know if it was just, were they viable?
I think the Soros one was detonated. I don't know about either of these two today, Wendy. I don't know yet.
So, all right. So we've narrowed down just
nothing.
We've narrowed down basically nothing, except we know, as Steve had pointed out, there's a certain direction, obviously. Do they keep some sort of a list of people, then, that they need to make sure that their residences are clear of anything like this, Steve? Do they say, well, if somebody's going after your top Democratic...
If A, then B, then we should follow C? Or...
Although the White House was in on that, too, right?
Well, that's... In what way, Wendy?
Did they get a...
I don't know that they did.
Okay.
CNN was reporting that they did, but before the news, was trying to find anyone else who had said that, and maybe they have, and I'll keep looking for it, but the White House hasn't said that they have, at least not yet. So I don't know about that. As far as others, I mean, you know, these are by and large, were people protected by the Secret Service. So I'm sure the Secret Service is alerted for others they're watching for. And, you know, a lot of people have their own security details who would be up.
Right. All these, the announcements anyway, I don't know if the discoveries were made within an hour, but the announcements were all made within an hour, weren't they?
Yeah, they all came pretty quickly. I think it was the Clintons first, then the Obamas, and then
CNN.
New York.
Yeah. All right. So CNN's plan of attack, then, is to move out of their studios immediately, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I have to say, they're broadcasting on the street now, and they have perfectly capable studios in Washington that they might switch to.
Yeah.
You know, but clearly...
Suggesting it looks more dramatic to be broadcasting from the street.
Well, they're in the center of it, yeah.
And for safety reasons. I mean,
no, but they could switch gears and go to the studio.
Although, maybe the bomber knows about those studios.
No. Well, they go back and forth. There's someone in the studio in D.C. They could do that.
Yeah.
What's next?
Every day is different, isn't it?
I know. I just. We're in a bad dream right now, aren't we? Are we going to wake up?
It's possible. I'm watching right now. Chris Cuomo is out on the street at CNN giving his account.
That's Jim Sciutto.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know any of these people.
Steve, I apologize. From where I'm standing, it looked like Chris Cuomo.
That's okay. Don't apologize to Jim, not to me.
I will. When I see him, I'll tell him I'm sorry. So they're all there outside of the CNN studios giving their report on you know, what they know. But it's basically, unless they know something they're not divulging, it's basically what we know, right? There's not much more to it than that.
Yeah, there's the picture, I think maybe you can see in the background there, of a containment truck or device that they would put this thing in to try to control it or detonate it. I don't know.
Looks and, like a giant washing machine kind of thing.
Sort of, but that in that hole in the middle is yeah, it is. I guess like a washing machine. They would put something in there, but they haven't moved anything to it, and they haven't moved it in some time, so I don't know. Just to, you know, back on the White House thing, I just did another quick search, and, you know, everywhere I see that it's reported that it's being attributed to a CNN report. So, like, for example, CNBC is reporting about saying according to CNN, so they have not verified it on their own. So, yeah, that might have been a case where something just came a little too quickly.
A texter just said CNN just confirmed on air that the report of package sent to White House was not correct.
Okay, well, there you go. All right.
But it's one of those stories that's unraveling so quickly that everyone's trying to grasp for facts.
Right.
And, you know.
That's the good thing and the bad thing about immediacy when it comes to breaking news. You don't always get the facts.
Yeah.
Although, really, who cares about the facts anymore? It doesn't really matter.
Well, I just think you have to watch these things or listen to me when things are happening fast.
All right.
I haven't finished. With the understanding that it is happening fast and it's all preliminary and... You know, the people who are doing these stories are doing their best to get it as accurately as they can, but...
And if you wait till everything is confirmed, you're going to be in the last place in ratings because everybody wants something now.
But I think where it comes to haunt you most, I mean, right now, luckily, there have been no explosions, there have been no casualties, but so many times when you have a fast-breaking story and there's a death toll, you see the numbers varying dramatically, and sometimes they'll give a number that's not even close to accurate, and they have to come back and retract it a short time later, you know?
So, yeah, they usually are getting those numbers from somebody.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And that's how we measure the severity of things. Unfortunately, that's just how it is. That's why there's always a rush to get that number.
Well, no need to go anywhere else because we will keep you covered on all the updated information, accurate information. And may I just say, we're in trouble because yesterday we were supposed to give away a $50 dinner certificate to White Pines Resort. Jasmine was not here. Your cat was not well. How's your kitty?
She's doing better. She's doing a lot better.
All right. That's good to know. We were in trouble. So we are going to give away two $50 gift certificates to White Pines Resort for dinner. That's located just 90 minutes west of Chicago in the White Pines Forest State Park in Oregon, Illinois. Home-style cuisine, generous portions, yummy, yummy, give me some-y. And then on
Friday... Did you say that? You said that?
And then when we give these $50 dinner certificates away to White Pines, on Friday, we're actually going to give away an overnight cabin stay at White Pines and an additional $50 dinner certificate. So good luck to everyone. May I just say, Bill, if you disconnect and reconnect, you get rewarded at White Pines. I thought this was a fact that you would like.
What is it?
When you put your phone away during dinner, you get 5% off your meal 7 days a week from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m.
Genius.
You love that, don't
you? Yes, I do.
All right, what number callers at 312-981-7200?
5 and 8.
5 and 8, 312-981-7200. We'll set you up with a $50 dinner certificate to White Pines Resort. And remember to put your phones away. Turn them off during dinner. You'll get an additional 5% off your meal. This happens from 5 to 9 p.m., 7 days a week. All the deets are at whitepinesresort.net. Callers 5 and 8.
And unplug your printer, too. See if that'll help. I wonder if people bring in just various electric devices and unplug them. Hey, my toaster's turned off. Look, I undid the blender.
Bill, we need to congratulate Kathy from Naperville and Bab from Chicago. They were callers number 5 and 8 at 312-981-7200. Each of them, Kathy and Bob, scored a $50 dinner certificate to the White Pines Resort. It's just 90 minutes west of Chicago in the White Pines Forest State Park in Oregon. Delicious home-style cuisine, generous portions, live entertainment in the dinner theater. And if you disconnect from your phone and reconnect to your loved ones, you get 5% off your meal when you put away your phone. I love that.
That's a great idea.
So go to whitepinesresort.net. We'll have another dinner certificate tomorrow, and then on Friday we're giving away an overnight stay.
Steve?
I'm sorry to interrupt, but ABC is reporting now that you could add New York Governor Cuomo's office to the list of locations that has received suspicious devices today.
Wow.
So they're looking into one of Cuomo's office as well.
Wow. That's a lot going on in one short time, isn't it?
And as the day goes on, I wonder what is to come.
Yeah. An interesting controversy yesterday on Megyn Kelly's show. Megyn Kelly used to be on Fox News. She switched over to NBC. She has her own television show called Megyn Kelly Today. The topic came up about Halloween costumes and about how some people have gotten into trouble for putting on either blackface or whiteface or something so that whoever you are is very different from the character you're portraying, right? So she said, Megyn Kelly said, when I was a kid, that was okay, so long as you were dressing up in character. This sparked a controversy from people calling it racist, saying that, no, quite the opposite. You can't do that. There's never a time where that's right. If you're a white person, you cannot put on blackface. If you're a black person, you cannot put on whiteface. It's offensive. So I was thinking about this last night, and I'm reminded of a time where one of my friends that I went trick-or-treating with, we would have been in either fourth or fifth grade, I don't remember which, my friend was Fat Albert, and part of his costume was putting on blackface to look like Fat Albert. And at the time, not only were there no negative comments, but so many people, when they opened the door, they recognized Fat Albert, and they said very funny things to Fat Albert because there he was at his front door. I saw that picture about a year and a half ago. I was going through some old pictures, and I saw his trick-or-treating and him being Fat Albert, and I got dizzy looking at the picture going, that would not fly today.
Not today, but, I mean, it happened. And if you dress as a vampire, you'd put white, really white makeup on. It's Halloween. Right. People, if you did it and it wasn't Halloween, I feel that's a huge problem.
So on that day, or if you're in a play, I guess, although that we've seen this happen with movies where they hire somebody to play a role and they're not of that ethnicity, and then there's some fallout, you know? So I think the rules are kind of still being crafted.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I don't know that I would blame a kid. You know, let's say a white kid's favorite basketball player is LeBron James, and he wants to be LeBron James for Halloween. How would that play out if he went door to door?
And I honestly, how would that be racist? How would that be negative?
I think it's racist because the history of blackface, of a white person putting on blackface and portraying a black character, is so negative that...
It was then at that... Does a kid even know about that?
See, that's the glitch in this whole thing, is that a kid wouldn't know that, but then you would say, yeah, but that kid's parents probably saw the costume and
maybe
it would have been their role. Might have even helped with it.
So if you go as the Cookie Monster who's blue, which my kid did one year, can you not paint their face blue?
No,
come on, Wade. It's not
different.
The same thing, you know.
That's different.
It's not the same history. But we're in a more sensitive time, and maybe that's a good thing too. It's not necessarily a bad thing. Bill, I remember there was a grade school play where the characters wore blackface, and you know that was a school play.
Yeah. Was there even one complaint at the time?
I was in middle school, so I wasn't aware of any.
Right. What was the play?
It was a teacher wrote an adaptation of What's Happening.
Yeah.
Oh, that
really?
Was my favorite show. Hey.
All right, here, it made me, I just thought of this now, Steve. I was in a play, it's a musical called Anything Goes, and I played one of three, there, Anything Goes takes place on a yacht. The whole show takes place on a giant boat.
Woohoo, lovey.
And I was one of three Chinese guys that worked in steerage on the yacht. We were like tailors. We only had a couple of scenes, but we were dressed as stereotypically Chinese as you could possibly dress anybody, you know? And I, at the time, again,
I
don't
remember. And how many of you had buck teeth in?
Out of the three of us.
Yeah. Seriously?
Yeah. Two out of the three of us.
Because our school, our elementary school, did like an Ellis Island thing, and you would dress up as people from other countries. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're still doing it as times have changed. But if you're not being disrespectful and you're depicting something, I don't feel that's negative. Buck teeth, yes. But
yeah,
if you're
like when they came up with that, I'm like, really? And they go, oh yeah, it'll be great.
They got it from Jerry Lewis.
Yeah, I know.
They did.
I know.
But I don't know. And we're all so sensitive now, and that might be a good thing. But then we're all so mean to one another too. So it doesn't work.
Yeah,
Kathy.
Hey guys, how are you?
Good. What are your thoughts on this, Kat?
You know, we went to a play a couple of years ago, my daughters and I, and it was the play Hairspray. It was fairly recently, and they had only two black cast members for the two main black parts. And the rest of the kids were in blackface. And they all their wardrobe was oranges, browns, dark grays. And all the white kids had the bright colors and the blonde hair. We were horrified.
Yeah.
This was maybe 5 years ago. Mm. And so my daughter at the time was in high school and wrote the company who put on the play and said, this is unacceptable. Like, if you don't have enough black people to play those parts, don't do that play.
Well, where did you, where was the, I mean, was it at a professional theater or was it a school or?
It wasn't a school. I don't want to put the people down.
I understand,
but it was like a neighborhood theater company.
It was a local, it was a national theater company with local pockets.
All right.
Like per county or what have you. And my, you know, we had friends in it, and I was just, they found the one person, two people we knew that were in it, like, were like, oh, I don't really get that, but I mean, it's no big deal. It is a big deal, and if you don't have enough people to play those parts, don't do it. And then when my daughter heard nothing back from this organization, she was beyond. She was, well, it's no wonder, consider the source.
Yeah. When the kids came out in blackface, were there a lot of parents just kind of looking around at other parents going,
oh, boy,
wait, is this really happening right now?
No.
No?
No. Wow. And we were sitting by the mom of the one of the black castmates and with a friend of ours who was black. And the friend of ours, young girl, she was in teens, looked at me like, are you seeing what I'm seeing? And I'm like, yep, I sure am.
Yeah.
Wow. But the mom of the child who was in it didn't seem bothered. And that just really threw me for a loop.
Kathy, amazing. Thank you for sharing that.
Thanks, Kathy.
Yeah, no problem. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks.
Just be nice to each other. It all goes back to that. Respect one another. Be nice to one another.
Solid
It'll
words.
Never happen, will it?
I don't see it for a while. We'll take a break. We'll get you some news, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. As you mentioned, Steve and everybody in the WGN newsroom will be following that story very closely all day today. Let's talk about magic. Halloween, a perfect time to discuss magic. Joey Cranford makes a return appearance to our show. He's the co-owner of the Chicago Magic Lounge, and along with Joey, David Parr, an award-winning magician with some incredible things on his resume. We'll discuss those with you in a little bit. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having
us. Great to be here.
We're about to publicize a show or a series of shows that are sold out, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Should we just leave?
No, stay.
Next
well,
time,
but my show
earlier.
Is ongoing, so...
Your show is still going,
yeah,
and there are seats available. All right, let's just quickly get this out of the way. If people want to see shows there, how do they go about doing that?
We have shows 7 days a week. Our signature shows are our most popular show. It's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, just like you'd buy a ticket to see a play or concert. Mm-hmm. You can just go online to buy those tickets. Typically, those shows sell out a few weeks in advance.
This is at Chicago Magic Lounge.
Chicago Magic Lounge.
5050 North Clark. Mm-hmm. It's just a lounge for magic. Is there drinking?
Just a lounge.
I've never
magic.
Been.
It's actually the first kind of concept of its kind in the Midwest. It's giant, but we borrow from a lot of the older concepts of magic bars in Chicago. There used to be magic bars on all sides of town. We talked extensively about that last time.
Yeah.
And so we take a lot of the aspects of these older magic bars that began in the 1915 era, 20s and 30s, had several of them. We had nine open at one time in the 70s and 80s. So we took the best little parts like magic at the bar, magic at your tables, a little bit of magic on stage, and created an entire kind of empire for that. So it's 7,200 square feet, three different rooms for magic, bar that's free anytime you want to go at 5 o'clock we open. The ticketed events...
Can you make the bill disappear?
No.
No. To sum up...
You need some serious sorcery for us to...
Okay.
It's a multi-million dollar facility completely devoted to the art of magic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And who honestly does not love magic? I am intrigued and amazed by it.
I think it's universal.
Yep.
In the fact that we all need... mystery. We hunger for mystery in our lives.
Yeah. I think we started to touch on this a little bit last time. Jerry Seinfeld used to do a thing about magicians, and it's like, now you see it, now you don't, you're an idiot, you know? Because it really is, you're to some extent, you're fooling people.
Well, to borrow a phrase from the New York Lounge, which was a Chicago magic bar from the 40s to the 80s, they had a slogan that said, it's fun to be fooled.
Yeah.
And we don't like to take advantage of you for that. It's we don't degrade you or make you feel like you're an idiot or stupid. A lot of people feel that magic challenges them.
Yeah.
But for the most part, we just want it to be be a fun experience to just let go of the world. And as David said, everyone needs a little bit of mystery. I think we all need a little misdirection.
Mm.
And so just to turn off reality for a little bit and just allow yourself to be fooled by a mystery.
Yeah.
It's like a puzzle. You want to struggle to put it together and you don't want to stop with a magic trick. You're like thinking about it afterwards for quite some time.
But we don't want you to worry about solving that puzzle.
Yeah,
we just want to give you a puzzle and just go, just deal with it.
That's the fun of it for some people. To them, it's a puzzle that demands a solution, and they'll worry over that forever. But for some people, they're able to just give themselves over to the experience of mystery and enjoy the feeling of not knowing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And
I don't know, and I'm very happy.
I think that's
really
important.
You can't solve everything, so you just go, wow, that's amazing, and leave it at that.
Well, it reminds us that we live in a universe of surprises.
Yeah.
Where we don't understand everything, and we know there's a surprise around the next corner.
David, every day I make a quarter come out of Wendy's ear, and every day she's amazed by it. She
well, there you go.
Every day.
There it is. Your daily dose of mystery.
All I had with magic was my Marshall Brodine TV magic cards, and I was very good at that.
We've recently become friends with Marshall Brodine Jr.
Oh,
he's
cool.
He's a friend of the lounge. He comes last week. He came in and brought me loads of Wizzo signed pieces. Recently signed, but the best thing I have, and he didn't even tell me, just put it in there. And Marshall, if you're listening, this was brilliant. He gave me the WGN pass of Marshall Brodine when he was here.
Really?
Yeah. So I have his guest pass for coming in as a production.
Who's you know, when you think of the best magicians of all time, of course Houdini's name comes up. Harry Houdini. Was he the best of all time, or is somebody way better than him?
He's certainly the most famous of all time.
The best marketer of all time. Sure.
Yeah. He even arranged to die on Halloween night. Right. So, I mean, that's great publicity.
Is the story true that he told his wife that if there is a life after death, that he would somehow come back? Is that all true?
That's what they say. I mean, that's what his wife said, that they had a code, and if he was going to get a message through, he would use that code to communicate.
Mm.
And did it happen?
Not yet.
We got to be patient. He's only been dead 86 years.
We're going to work on it.
Do you know the story about why he was obsessed with this coming back from the dead thing? Because he made a whole career out of debunking these psychics and this paranormal stuff that would go on. Came to Chicago and just turned the whole world upside down as far as like paranormal psychic activity goes, and exposed a lot of it as tricks. And he sat down with this one kind of medium, and they were all having this thing, and she says, you know, I'm talking to your mother right now. She says she loves you. She says she can't wait to see you again sometime. She will. And he's like, that's very moving. But I didn't know you spoke Hungarian. My mother does not speak English. She wouldn't speak it in the afterlife either. So you're fake. You're phony. And we got to go.
Wow. Like,
brilliant.
That's perfect. Yeah. You'll do some magic for us when we come back?
Absolutely.
Now, I know it's radio, so that can be a little tricky. We're going to Facebook Live it so everybody can see what we're talking about. We'll have
There'll be a video, actually.
A video.
At WGNradio.com. So you'll find it. Later today.
Perfect. Joey Cranford is here, the co-owner of the Chicago Magic Lounge, and magician David Parr, and we'll pick this up in just a little bit. It's a kind of magic.
It's a kind of magic. Who doesn't love magic? Bill, you love magic.
I sure do, Wendy. Joey Cranford is here. He's the co-owner of the Chicago Magic Lounge. David Parr, along for the ride, award-winning magician, who was just featured on the television show Fool Us, the Penn & Teller show. And you were a big winner on there, right?
I did. I fooled their faces off.
Penn & Teller. I just started watching this show, and a magician will come up and try and flummox Penn & Teller. And it's so funny because Penn & Teller will reveal whether or not they understood the joke and some kind understood the trick in some kind of code so they don't give it away.
Only magicians understand.
Yes.
Yeah. Ah. Yeah. Well, in my case, and I had never seen this happen before, they were so baffled by it that they didn't even have a guess. They
really?
Yeah.
Can you say, of course don't divulge, magicians never divulge, but can you say what you did that baffled them?
It was an effect performed with two decks of playing cards, and the host of the show, Allison Hannigan, and I, and we both shuffled our decks, and we cut them several times, and we picked a card and exchanged decks, and in the end, it turned out that the cards we had both chosen were matched.
One time in a magic trick? That's that girl.
That's what she said. That's how she handled it. Wow.
Yeah.
That's so impressive.
What did you win? I mean, aside from the fact that you fooled two of the greatest magicians of our generation, what else did you win for that?
Beyond the bragging rights, my trophy is on display in the Chicago Magic Lounge. You can see it right there in the bar area. There's like a little sort of shrine to my fool us appearance. I said when I drop dead, they can put flowers in there and it'll be very touching. I got to go back and do a spot in their live show in Las Vegas.
Was that a thrill for you?
It was super fun.
Yeah, I bet.
I got to perform the piece I did on TV for an audience of 1,500 people.
Wow. Yeah.
You know what's interesting about them is they to some extent, they make fun of magicians. They've done that for years, and yet magicians love them.
Yeah, well, I think it's all done with love. I think it's all done with respect. You know, the poking and prodding of magicians. I think it's good for us. We have to not take ourselves too seriously.
Sure.
And I think it encourages us to see where our flaws are and improve and grow.
That makes sense.
Chicago Magic Lounge, the big Halloween show, is currently sold out. So sorry for that. you can go to chicagomagiclounge.com. Can they buy tickets for next year already?
Not quite. No, but we do have a lot of events coming up. You know, Mondays and Tuesdays, live jazz and close-up magic. Every Wednesday is David Parr's regular show, Cabinet of Curiosities. And that's just spooky year-round, which is a lot of fun.
Because that's where I live. I live in spooky town.
You juice it up a little bit this time of year?
Oh, definitely. I add some extra spooky stuff too.
Yeah.
On Halloween, we're doing a seance, a recreation of a Victorian era seance in our 654 Club. That's the smaller theater in the Chicago.
Will there be
Magic
a Ouija
Lounge.
Board?
There will not be a Ouija board, but we will be attempting to contact the spirits.
Should kids be allowed to play with Ouija boards or not?
Why not? Yeah. It's from Parker Brothers, right? I mean, they make Monopoly.
Right.
If the kids want to experience a little Halloween fun with us, but not necessarily contact the dead,
yes,
we still do have tickets available for this Sunday for our family show, our family matinee, where we have kids coming in costume. We might give out costume prizes. We might have a kids parade if it's cute enough. I don't know.
Nice.
And we're gonna have candy for the children. So it's a nice fun. We're not necessarily doing spooky stuff on stage, but in the spirit of Halloween, magic is always a little creepy, and we're allowing the kids to come dressed up, so it should be a fun time.
ChicagoMagicLounge.com. You can find out all the availabilities and shows. I want that trick. I'm ready
can
for
you
that
something
trick.
For us?
Okay, I'm going to come around there, Wendy.
All right, we'll have to share a microphone.
Okay.
Do I have to, can I keep my clothes on?
Please.
Wendy, so asked Wendy, all of our guests
have you ever
that day.
Dabbled in the dark arts?
Not really.
Have you ever wanted to dabble in the dark arts?
Depends.
Well, now's your chance. We're going to see if you have the right stuff. First, you must pass a test. Now, don't worry. It's not a written exam. In fact, for this test, all we need are two pieces of tissue paper in festive fall colors. In witchcraft, as in so many other things, color coordination is paramount. I will give this half to you. If you would please tear those pieces in half. Tear them right down the middle, just like I'm doing. And then I will take the left hand or sinister half. Thank you. Oh, what the heck, the right half too. In for a penny, in for a pound, they say. Whatever that means.
I don't know.
Wendy, hold out your right hand flat. I will give these to you, crumpled up pieces. If you would place your other hand on top. Squeeze those, and do you know any magic words?
What everyone knows, abracadabra.
That's the best one. You have been dabbling in the dark arts, haven't you? Whisper the magic word into your hands like this.
Abracadabra.
Excellent. Give those a squeeze again, and let's see what happened. I think you passed the test. Look at this. Tell them what's happening.
Oh, yeah, somebody play by play.
All right, so what happened was there was an orange piece of paper and a black piece of paper all torn up. Wendy had them in her hands, and now it is a witch's hat made out of the same paper, but it's all been joined together magically.
Wow, and I'm a witch, so this is perfect.
Congratulations. You are a full-fledged witch, our guest of honor.
Thank you.
David, wow. He made you a hat out of paper.
I didn't do it.
No, Wendy did it.
This is all Wendy's latent power.
See, now that's I have amazing. No explanation for that, oh, and magic. I don't care. I'm just happy it's with magic. My hat.
I have no explanation for it either.
David, does the phrase magic trick contains the word trick, is that correct terminology?
I tend not to use that
word. You don't want to say magic trick. What's the right terminology?
Honestly, I call it all...
an illusion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's to make the point of, I think the most important thing is not the fooling aspect. The most important thing is the mystery aspect.
Sure.
That feeling of awe or wonder that's so important to us as human beings.
Yeah.
And so that's at the heart of magic.
Yeah.
So and I don't think trick conveys that.
No.
So I think mystery or illusion is a more important thing.
It was Doug Henning who always would say, it's an illusion.
And he was my idol when I was a kid.
Doug Henning was?
Yeah. He was the most famous magician in the world when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And I got to meet him a couple of times and chat with him.
Good guy?
Yeah.
Good.
All right, go back to your own microphone, man. You're invading my space now.
Just because you give Wendy a hat doesn't mean you get to keep her microphone.
The great thing about Doug Henning was that sort of kooky, I believe in magic hippie persona was not a put on. That was the guy.
Was him?
That was the guy I met.
Yeah.
And it taught me that sincerity goes a long way. If people sense that you're being genuine on stage, they'll go along with you for the ride wherever you lead them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can I keep this hat? I'm sorry.
Absolutely, that is yours now forever.
I wear that all the time. Is magic universal? Is it everywhere all throughout
the
planet?
Every culture needs it.
Yeah,
you know, and like I said, I think it was born out of that basic need for mystery, for that feeling of awe and wonder. That's very important.
Sure.
You know, it's a good reminder of the fact that we don't know everything.
That's a good point. Some people think they know everything, but we don't.
Really quick, I know that you've been open less than a year. Are things on schedule? You got to be pretty happy with the way things are going, right?
It's wonderful. It's actually exceeding our expectations. Just more and more people keep finding us. We're number one on TripAdvisor in Chicago for nightlife, which is outstanding. Unbelievable. 5 stars on Yelp, which is...
That's great.
That's a magic trick in and of itself. Yeah. I mean, people are just so happy. They love the space. They love the environment. They love the service, the friendliness of everybody. We're just so happy to be there, and it shows, you know, like David said, if we're happy on stage and we're happy as a business, people are just going to have a better
time. Without
a doubt. We're just thrilled to be part of part of the cultural
community. So nice.
What's fantastic about it is that everything about it, the atmosphere, the staff, everything about it supports the magic.
Good.
From the moment you walk in the door, the magical experience starts.
Love it. That's excellent. Keep up the great work. Joey Cranford, the co-owner of the Chicago Magic Lounge, located at 5050 North Clark in Chicago, and then David Parr, award-winning magician. Here's the website you want to visit, chicagomagiclounge.com. All the information's there. Or give him a call at 312-366-4500.
Job well done.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
A break, some news, more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. One of our favorite guests is here. He rolls in the mobile couch, clinical psychologist, certified life coach, parenting and relationship expert. Dr. John Duffy is with us. How's it going, John?
It's going great, guys. It's good to be here.
I already told you. Oh, go on.
No, I was just going to say, you can also hear his podcast that he co-hosts with his wife, Julie Duffy, on WGN Plus or wherever your favorite podcasts are found. It's called Better. There. Now you, Bill.
All right. I couldn't wait for you to come in today because I thought of something the other day, and you're the most perfect person to discuss this with. Every year on Jimmy Kimmel's show, they do this thing. They've been doing this for 4 or 5 years.
The meanest thing ever done in the world.
It is the meanest thing ever done in the world, and here's how it plays out. He has parents. This is the night of Halloween. He has parents explain to their children in the morning after the kids have been out trick-or-treating and, you know, the anticipation and the build-up, and now all of a sudden they have a bucket full of candy. When the kids wake up in the morning, the parents explain to the kids that while the kids were sleeping, the parents, ate all the candy.
Yes.
So you get two reactions. You get kids that scream and yell and cry and tell the parents they hope that they die, and it's
complete
awful.
Devastation, some
complete
of them.
Complete, absolute devastation.
Yes.
Like you've never seen before. And then you get a small percentage of kids who just, you know, think about it and go, that's okay, mom or dad. I understand. You like candy too. We'll get more next year.
What a great kid.
Right? All right. So I have a couple of questions.
Please.
Question number one. What is the long-lasting effect on a child if you pull a practical joke on your kid like this? I mean, obviously, when it's all said and done, they pull out the bucket of candy, they've hidden it, and they give it to the kids. But is there any kind of long-term, oh, I thought I could trust these people, and no, I can't?
Right. I'm of two minds on this because I've seen this bit, and I am very entertained by it.
Yes.
Clinically, it worries me a little.
Yes.
In part because of the very public nature of being on Jimmy Kimmel, you know what I mean? So millions of people are seeing you
make
a fool of yourself. And I, not to be a major buzzkill here, but the idea of having your parents' phone trained on you,
yes,
during your humiliating moment that's been jerry-rigged to humiliate
yes.
you might not be the best parenting move
right.
one of us can make.
Right, right, right.
So I'm not a huge fan, even though I get the bit. I get that it's really funny. And on balance, if the emotional bank account between parent and child is in the black,
yeah.
I think you can get away with some pranks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If the kid is in on the joke and can laugh at the joke,
yes.
great. The kid who shows like that kind of the graciousness is so wild to me. It blows me away
yes.
when a kid is willing to show that and really means it. You can see
right.
that those kids really mean like, hey, mom, dad, if you're really hungry for candy, you absolutely should have mine.
Yes.
And there's something I really want to talk to those parents and ask them, you know, what? How did you train
Yeah, what have you done? Because right. that is amazing to me.
It's
okay, mom and dad.
Oh, you see, sometimes the child will have their arms outreached to the parent. Like, I know you must feel awful about right. doing this to me. I'll console you.
Yeah, I will comfort you.
It's insane. All right. The question number two is, what does this say about ne'er-do-wells like you and me that we enjoy watching this? Because I can't watch it.
Wendy,
every year when I come in, she goes, why would you watch that? It's so awful.
Right.
And it is, but
right.
it's entertaining.
It's entertaining. and Wendy, I think a lot of people look at it like you do. I think a lot of us like it in that kind of The Office kind of dark comedy where, you know, like it's like, ooh, it's too cringeworthy to watch.
Right.
I can't take my eyes off it, and I love it. You know?
Right.
Where I think the idea is to create dissonance. I notice Kimmel does this with a number of things. He'll go out and on the street and ask somebody just to name a book.
Right.
And they can't name a book.
Right.
You know? And so I think part of it is this little social commentary to make us uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But also holds up a little bit of a mirror culturally to, like, what are we really about here?
Yes.
I think he's trying to say something underneath it all.
All right. I have tried my best to analyze why this bit either works for those of us who enjoy it, or and Wendy, you're not alone. There's plenty of people, whenever we talk about it, they go, I had to turn the TV off. I couldn't watch kids be humiliated. All right. So here's my question. What you have here is kids, and they're young kids. They're usually 4 or 5 or 6 years old. And it's the people they trust the most in the whole world, their
Correct.
Parents, who have out and out sold them out.
Yeah.
What's going on there? why does that register as comedy?
The reason it creates such a big reaction is because these are the most trustworthy people in my life, right?
Yeah.
What's going on there, I think, is honestly, this kind of Insta age of kind of creating this fame for ourselves.
Yeah.
It's broader than Jimmy Kimmel. I think a lot of people are trying. There's a guy I follow who my son and my wife think it's the stupidest thing, and it actually is. He's the Bat Dad. Have you ever seen this guy?
No.
He dresses like Batman, and he talks to his parents like Batman. He talks to his children, his parents, his wife, as if he's Batman.
I've seen that.
And I don't know why I think it's so funny. It's irreverent. The kids are confused. They don't know what's going on. But part of it is that this guy's trying to create a brand, right? So I think too many of us, and again, not to be too much of a buzzkill,
yeah,
try to make our children part of our brand, even the humiliation of our kids. So I think we remove ourselves from, I might be doing some psychological damage here.
Yeah.
And instead we convince ourselves we're going to be an Insta-famous family and this is going to be great for everybody.
Yeah.
you know?
But that's, be honest, that's a little damaging. Inaccurate, right?
Oh, it's absolutely inaccurate. And I think, honestly, in the extreme like this, it can be really damaging.
I think so, too.
Yeah, yeah, I really do.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
So you're going to stop watching it, right? You're not going to watch it anymore?
No, I will absolutely stop. I'll watch it this afternoon.
Remember that, I don't know if it was parents. I know it was a dad who busted his son's gaming system. And he has since, didn't they lose custody of their children or something?
Something went very south there in the wake of that.
And those were horrific to watch. Yeah. I mean, you see him destroy his Xbox because he didn't vacuum or something as crazy as that. And that borderlined, they didn't even come right up and go, only kidding. It took them a very long time. So that, I feel, could really be some PTSD from that.
Yeah, you walk the line of negligence and abuse when you make it real public that you're going to punish your kid in this very public way. And that's become this trend on YouTube and social media.
No question.
It's disturbing.
Dr. John Duffy is our guest. If you'd like to weigh in, please give us a call or a text to 312-981-7200. Either of those will work.
Dr. John Duffy is here. He is a clinical psychologist. He's our show psychologist. There, we can just say it.
He puts his time in, too.
Yeah.
It's a full-time job.
Big time.
Yes, it is. Are you okay with talking about seasonal affective disorder?
I would love to.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What should we know about it, John?
Okay, so this is something this time of year I see all the time in my practice. As the days get shorter and the nights get longer and it gets colder, a lot of us tend to, and I think vast majority of us tend to hibernate a little bit and wind down and slow down. And some of us get really depressed about that and, you know, look at these next 6 months as like lost time. Like, I'm going to hold my breath through this time. I'm down. I'm depressed. I'm going to be on the couch. I'm going to Netflix until spring comes.
Yeah. Until the first tulip comes up.
Until that next equinox.
Yes.
And the symptoms can be pretty severe. So it can go from like being kind of sad sometimes, overeating, not getting enough exercise, not getting enough sleep, or getting too much, to becoming hopeless, feeling worthless, and even feeling suicidal in the very extreme.
Yeah.
Usually that is that begins with some degree of depression coming in. There are a whole bunch of things we can do to mitigate this thing. The one that has the most research behind it is this light. It's called phototherapy.
That really works?
You know, Wendy, when I first heard about this about 15 years ago, I really thought, like, wow, my field has really stepped into quackery, like, in the extreme. Because effectively, you get this light, you turn it up toward your face, you stare at it in the morning for about 30 minutes, and the research behind this, and I've read 5 or 7 studies that suggest, yeah, this works. You know, the idea being that light specifically is the issue. And if you expose yourself to something akin to sunlight, that you will feel less depressed.
I mean, think about it. And we've talked about this, Bill. Like, for a while, it was gray every day.
Yeah.
And then, like, all of a sudden, there's a break and you see blue sky. I've said it a million times, like, oh my God, aren't you in just a better mood? There's something to be said for that.
Oh, there absolutely is. I have worked with people in the last few years who have moved to coasts, to Florida and California, in order to mitigate this issue in their lives. So, you know, it's no small thing. Some people feel like it drives their lives for half the time,
right,
and feel like they've got to get away.
Yeah.
The thing that I found most effective in my office is to cognitively find some different way to look at this, to come up with a new project, to get in great shape over these months, or to recognize my circadian rhythms slow down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
This might be a time I just spend more time with my family. This might not be the most productive resume driving time of my life, but these 6 months are good for recharging the batteries. And if you can kind of accept that as the holidays come along and for the couple of months beyond that and really embrace that,
right,
then you can mitigate this issue to some extent.
So what is it specifically about the light? When I was working in another radio station, ironically, not the light, and we were talking about these lights, and they sent one to, it was with Rokana, they sent one to Ro and one to me, and we tried it, and we could tell the difference within days.
Yeah.
Did you use it regularly?
Yeah, we would keep them on during the show.
Oh, in the studio.
Yeah, they were aimed right at us, and we would just keep them on during the show. And you felt the difference.
Yeah.
You felt it almost instantaneously.
Yeah.
But I can't figure out what was in the light that would provide that for us.
Yeah, I think it's just that our brains are used to being alert and awake and productive when there is light.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it recharges our batteries kind of automatically. I don't think it's the only way. I just think it's a great shortcut that somebody came up with. I think, and if I remember right, they stumbled upon this a little bit by accident by turning a desk lamp upside down.
Oh, yeah, maybe. You know?
But that's how some great things come to be, too. Yeah.
So is there a specific type of light you should be looking for?
Specifically, it should be a phototherapy lamp. It can't just be any desk lamp. It has a certain degree of illumination that first of all, isn't harmful to you, but also provides enough light that it mimics sunlight enough that you feel like, okay, I feel like this is a regular summer day.
Right.
And that's what a lot of people describe, is it feels like you're kind of at a beach, and it's a little meditative as well, you know, and you kind of calm down a little bit.
Oh, sure.
And come down off of some of the negative thinking about what the winter is like.
Strobe light would be bad?
Strobe light would probably not be particularly effective.
Okay. Okay, for Bill, it might be. Who knows? Right. But it's normal to feel a little bummed out over because then the holidays are coming. And as much as I love the holidays, for some reason I get bummed out during the holidays because you think of all your loved ones that are no longer with you. It's not debilitating to me, but I think we all get the blues.
You know, I think that's exactly right, Wendy. And sometimes I think we work too hard to avoid that, right? That we convince ourselves that the holidays, and a lot of times a year, are supposed to be very, very positive, kind of, and consistently that. And if we feel the blues in any way, we feel like we're doing it wrong. We're failing.
Or something's wrong with us.
Right, and something's wrong with us. When, in fact, you know, this is a time of year where emotions are amplified.
Yep.
So we're going to feel the highs, you know, probably a little higher than we might in June. We're also going to feel the lows. So we're going to feel the losses. We're going to feel the sadness, you know, that we might feel any other time of year with a little more vigor than we might, you know. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's probably, if we can embrace that, like, you know what, the whole range of emotions has some validity and utility for us, then, you know, we can breathe a little bit deeper.
Does seasonal affective disorder usually manifest itself in kids or adults, or is it equal both kids and adults?
I find far more adults are affected by it.
Yeah.
It seems to set in right around the college age time.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't work with many kids who are middle school or high school who are affected by this. And I think there's a little bit, not of obliviousness, but kind of like there's so much routine in their lives that, you know, I think it's kind of almost imperceptible. Whereas for those of us who are a little bit older, we tend to absorb it a little bit more.
That makes
sense.
I think
it definitely has its onset in adulthood.
It does.
Typically.
Yeah.
And that's such a weird age. I mean, college is exciting, but you're also realizing all of a sudden mistakes you make are going to have bigger repercussions because now you're pretty much an adult.
Yes.
So I could see where that might affect college students more so.
Definitely. And it's probably a different segment altogether, but, you know, that expectation that college be every wonderful thing that you know, the greatest 4 years of your life. I think we kind of overplay that card with young people. And when they have that first Friday night where they're alone, I think they feel like they're doing that wrong too, or feeling that wrong.
If I could just say to people, I always wanted to go out every Friday, every Saturday, sometimes Thursdays and Sundays too. But when you get older, there's nothing better than staying in on those Friday nights.
Yeah. Oh, and it's a great idea for a college student to learn to embrace, like, every once in a while, I just want to be home.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If you want to hear John Duffy's podcast, Better, that he does with his wife, Julie, it's easy to find at WGN Plus. Dozens of them are available right now. Thanks for coming in, John.
Thanks
Greatly
for having
appreciate
me, guys.
It. We'll take a break. We'll get you some news. And then there's more of us, Bill and Wendy, on WGN. Ken, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Two of our favorite guests have returned to the studios here at WGN. Mike Leonard, an award-winning producer and filmmaker, and Mary Kay Wall, executive producer over at Leonard Films, in to talk about a new documentary premiering tomorrow on WTTW Global Generation. Hey, guys, welcome back.
Bill and Wendy, how are you?
Nice to see both of you.
Great. I love hearing Bill go, yeah, we whipped this together, the new studios.
Yeah.
We're glad you like it.
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you.
Yeah, this, what happened was, like many people, disturbed by all the divisiveness, and I didn't want to get political or anything like that, but you go, how are we going to get out of this if we, you know, the fear of the other and all the rest? And so I thought, well, what about the next generation coming up? And so Mary Kay and I were talking about that, and where do we do this? And Lake Forest Academy, which I'm familiar with, has kids from 40-some countries there. So we could get a global idea of what's this, what's going on here, and also to see how they're getting along. You know, you have kids from China and kids from Mexico and Russia and the U.S. and the South Side. How do they get along? And they get along well. They sort of make them, you know, a Chinese kid will live with a Mexican kid, or like a black kid from the South Side will live with a Russian. You wouldn't choose to do that. You'd probably choose to go with who you're familiar with.
Right.
But these misconceptions are overruled. They'll say, well, I didn't know much about the Asian kids, but he's a good guy, and vice versa. So it ended up being one of those stories that we went in with no real plan except to talk to kids from 40 countries about life. And it came out to be, I think, very interesting.
It gives me hope when I hear you say that. Mm-hmm. I think we're okay, but maybe a little set in our ways as adults. And I think kids have a way of really changing the way the future is going to be. Did you talk to any of them about voting and stuff? I have a couple of teenagers who are disillusioned because, does your vote really matter? Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. But then they come back and say, yeah, but the popular vote didn't win the election. Right. Did they talk about that at all?
No, purposefully, we didn't bring up anything involving politics at all. It was just life and fear of failure and things like that. It's fear, as we know, that dictates a lot of the behavior.
For
fear
all
of the
us.
Other, right. And I learned through my years at Today, I would go out and do stories on regular people all over the country. And we have more in common than we're led to believe, whatever side of the political divide you're on. But when, you know, there's fear or there's profit in division, and so people do that. And I just thought, my wife, you talked about hope. We edit these stories at my house, Mary Kay and I, up in the second floor. My wife would come in, and she'd watch bits and pieces of it, and she says, this story just gives me hope. Because
that's all we have now. I'm sorry.
It's all we do have.
And it's delightful to see. You know, you see all these people from around the world getting along in the midst of this environment where there seems to be, you know, bad news and divisiveness everywhere. We actually felt like the rest of the world seemed really bland, because you walk into this place and you hear a multitude of languages and music, and they even have a variety of ethnic foods in their cafeteria, and
that's
it's just
great.
A great thing.
So would you say the way that we relate to people who are culturally different from us, is that learned behavior or is that innate behavior? How would we just normally function with people who are different than us?
Well, I think it starts innate. You know, we're tribal.
Yeah.
The fear of the other was built into us for a good reason a long, long time ago. And then I think it's the other stuff comes in. People, you know, you hear conversations at home. Oh, don't trust these people. It's interesting. One of the African American kids we interviewed, he lived with an Asian his freshman year, and his roommate from China told him that his parents told him, stay away from black men when you come to America because they're violent and dangerous. And that's what we learn, right? But I think instinctively, if you go out and you're a cheerleader or a gymnast, you'll probably go and eat with the gymnasts in your cafeteria.
Right.
You collect together. But when you add the fear to the situation, then it gets, well, like we see in the news today, it gets scary. And isn't it better? This is what you do. You talk to people every day.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it better? And your listeners love it when we learn about each other.
Without a doubt.
And it works.
But that fear, I feel, is something that many people don't want to admit. Like, honestly, if you're mean to someone or you're rude and you just come right out and say, I was afraid of you at first, I'm sorry, I was wrong, but no one wants to admit fault.
Yes, that's right.
And that's what the problem is.
And it's, you know, it's overcoming those misconceptions by building a relationship with a person. And one-on-one, you know, people overcome their tribe. There's a great scene in the film where they have a tradition there where the students come down to have an all-school picture in this armor garden, you know, that's so beautiful on the campus. And they all were kind of walking down the stairs of this Reed building and lining up outside. You could see every variation of human face and color you know, all gathered together, and they started goofing around with each other and putting their arms around each other. And I thought, boy, you couldn't stage something so united.
That was right. Perfect.
You know, you talk about fear, too. That's a big part of this, because raising kids, you know that if we only progress if we go to something that we haven't done before. If you're playing a sport against a team that's better. And you don't want to fail, so you move away from that. But they require the students to play two or three sports a year.
They do.
Yeah, and so kids, I don't know. What sport am I going to play? So, well, I don't know. Figure it out. And there's a Chinese kid who's playing baseball and hockey. He's never played either one. And he's on the JV team. Doesn't play much.
Yeah.
But he gets over that. He's going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
So you get over that. And a lot of the students then decide to go into arts or all the rest because they're no longer that afraid of stumbling. And I think, as we all know as a parent, it's encouraged to, hey, you fall down. Do it.
That's how you learn, by mistakes.
That's how you learn. And you hover above them. They create, it creates a fear of something else that comes out later in life.
I know your goal in this was to remain apolitical. You didn't want political influence, but deep down, there are political undertones to all this.
Absolutely, isn't it, right? Yeah, there is, and because of the way politics is now, where you can't, there's no allowance for agreement, it seems, and they have a. Their whole school is based on this global pluralism, and that's, you know, a lot of the nations in the world today are becoming more isolated. And I never was a good student, and I'm not a historian, but I know enough that that doesn't work. You look through history, and prior to World War One or Two, these nations were coming and isolating themselves.
Right.
So.
One of the great things to speculate about is, because of the way these kids are being educated, you know, what kind of leaders are they going to be for the future? They're going to understand people better. And they even said that in a lot of the interviews, that, you know, if they have to make a decision about something that happens in the Middle East and they have Middle East friends, they're going to think differently about
it. Sure.
Even the idea of Lake Forest Academy, you think elite prep school, rich kids. You wouldn't think it would be this diverse, but the head of school, John Strudwick, made it a point to you know, bring this global pluralism in and make the school that way. So it's not what you think. You think if it's just protected and secluded and kids, but they're not.
Yeah. We'll talk more to Mike Leonard and Mary Kay Wall. Their documentary, Global Generation, premieres on WTTW tomorrow. That's Thursday, October 25th. Starts at 9 o'clock. Our guests are Mike Leonard and Mary Kay Wall. They've put together a great documentary called Global Generation. It premieres tomorrow on WTTW. That's your Channel 11. It starts at 9 o'clock. In it, they talk to students from 41 different countries as diverse as Kazakhstan, China, Russia, Mexico, Rwanda. What was the commonality with all these kids, would you say?
Hopeful.
Being hopeful? Yeah.
I think they're very hopeful. I think that they want to, they're all very accepting, it seems. I know I'm sounding Pollyannish about this, but nothing is perfect, but they have just grown much more accepting across gender issues, racial issues, religious issues, and in individual relationships, they're learning more about the world, you know, than most kids their age.
I'm amazed at young kids who are so up on the news. You know, there was a mock election at my son's high school yesterday. Everybody participated in it. I was not that politically aware when I was in high school, and I got to be honest with you, I didn't really care. I was not very interested. Are these kids featured in Global Generation? Are they worried about the environment? Are they worried about what our future world is going to be like?
They are. And it's interesting because we didn't have any agenda. We had no real plan. We're just going to start talking to kids. At first, we were going to really center on the cell phone and see if that isolation was a factor. But the more we talked, the story just came together. And some of the kids weren't naturally articulate. They were nervous. They've never been on camera before. It's a new language for a lot of them.
Sure.
But they opened up and were very honest about stuff. And yes, of course they are. And they're worried about that. They, when the Parkland thing happened, they all walked outside and, you know, they left class. They did that. They joined in that march. There are political situations, I'm sure, where there's rights and lefts. But like I say, we purposefully did not want to go political because we just wanted to see what they thought about being open-minded. And that will solve some political problems if you're simply open-minded. And I knew, as I said before in the break, that I was a really, really lousy student, and I had learning issues, and I never raised my hand, and I would never be able to talk publicly, and I don't talk smoothly if it weren't for all the mistakes made along the line. The only reason I got a little bit used to it was when I was playing hockey at a high level. I had to be interviewed on television, and I hated it, and I sounded stupid. But as we said, I didn't die. And I think when that happens, you grow. And these kids are getting a voice now.
Right.
They're nervous, and now they're going to see themselves on TV, and some aunt and uncle in Kazakhstan is going, "That's my kid." Or, you know, and it's really powerful because now there's a reason to be reasoned, you know, and say it out loud.
Go on. I'm sorry.
Because of that reason, one of the values that we had was to make sure we used each student that we interviewed, and not leave anybody out. And it was funny, I was listening to you on the radio the other day, and you were talking about, you know, when you're asked to be in a documentary, and you end up on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
So that didn't happen to anyone.
Well, you know,
that's
been
Mike's value.
That was
my
theory when I was at the Today Show, is if I interviewed five people in a town, I would use all of them.
Yeah.
And because I knew that each one of them would go home and say, I was interviewed on the Today Show. So part of it, a big part, was just trying to be kind to them. I didn't want them to think, when everybody's watching the family, oh, I didn't make it. Maybe I wasn't good enough. But then it made me a better journalist, because I had to use those different voices.
Yeah.
Had to find a way. And we interviewed 65 or something people. Every one has a moment.
In.
And it was tough, because sometimes people didn't say a whole lot.
Yeah.
But they said something. And I had to take the script and or the narration and or the story and push it to include it. And
that's
big
of you guys.
But it comes. I think it sounds not journalistic,
right.
But I think it is journalistic.
Sure.
Because you force yourself to get all the voices in, and it's tough.
And you said you did it because you're kind.
Well, I don't know if I'm kind. It was a kind thing. I thought.
Yes. Yeah. But is kindness an overall thing that you notice between these students? Because I think that's what's missing these days, is we're not kind to one another anymore.
Absolutely.
Yes.
They have a situation. They have an all-school handshake in the first weeks of the school. And they get out there, and it's, I don't even know how they do the math of it, but they go around, and each kid shakes hands with every other student and faculty member.
Everyone.
And they're facing them, and it's really an interesting thing to see. Just shake hands. Just look at each other. We're in this together. But kindness is a factor. We've seen a lot of the students going, you know, they might be an athlete, but they're at the play, and they're supporting each other. And it's the coaches emphasize that. The teachers do. It's not perfect. But it was a perfect laboratory for us to see this. And that's why my wife would say, it gives me hope. And we didn't try to create a hopeful thing. We just tried to create something that was true. But it does give us hope, and they're leading the way. So it was really interesting.
One of the things, because, as Mike said, they require that they all participate in sports, they're with each other as they're overcoming fears. So they develop empathy. And I think that's what's really lacking right now in our society, is people may help people out of guilt or resignation, but what about empathy for another person's...
Right. Walk in somebody's shoes.
Yeah.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
You know, and when you're talking about your children and music and theater, and I mean, you go out there and you have to do it, and you're going to rise or fall. And it's easier just to stay back and criticize somebody trying to do it.
Is the plan for these kids to stay in the United States, or will they eventually, is their plan to go back to wherever their homelands are?
Well, I don't think they can. You know, it's a big issue to stay in the States. A lot of them want to go and to go to college here.
Yeah.
And we asked that question of some of the Chinese kids, and they said they would love to stay, the ones we talked to.
Uh-huh.
But they said it's not up to us.
So they just are here for the time to get the schooling, and then they need to return to their homes.
I think about 35% around that are on scholarship. And there are some wealthy kids there who pay a big ticket item to go to school there.
Yeah.
It's very expensive. But then they're mixing with students who don't have that money. But from those who I talked to, most of them seemed like they would love to at least participate in some way in the American dream, so to speak. And the ones I met, I thought, well, it'd be great to have them.
Sure.
Because they're good.
Yeah.
And they're empathetic, and they're smart.
Hard workers.
And I mean, it's a great school. Intellectually, we didn't talk here or that much about how good it is. for the students and the studies and all the rest. But you know, they're good.
Yeah,
I want to. If I'm on a hockey team, I want the best players. Yeah,
absolutely.
We all breathe the same air. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Right.
So
the documentary is called Global Generation. It premieres tomorrow night on Channel 11 on WTTW. It starts at 9 o'clock. It ends at 10 o'clock. Mike Leonard and Mary Kay Wall have been our guests. Guys, thanks for coming up. Really appreciate it. Can't wait to see this.
Can't wait to see it.
Thank you. A little bit of a break and then more show.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's all happening here, 720 WGN.